Coming to you live from the kingdom of Everrealm, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who's misplaced his fire orbs, Rob Sesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our continuing coverage of the quest. And boy, it's a 2-hour block of the quest as we look to find the one true hero. And we're down to only so few paladins left that it's really getting down to the nitty gritty. And here to sort it all out is the man who has been following everything so closely that he's an honorary one of the fates. Here he is, the tabulator, Mr. Kurt Clark.
Hey there, how's it going?
Kurt, how are you?
Doing good.
Yes. Do you have your medallions on? You ready to go?
I have my medallions. I've got passport stamps from each of the 12 realms and ready to hit the ground running.
Okay. We might be a little punch drunk after going through 2 hours of the quest tonight.
Oh, yeah. I've been drinking with Sir Ansgar. That's what my head feels like right now.
drinking with Ansgar, is that code for something?
I know. It sounds like it's like Sundays with Maury. It's like some book out there that's going to be on the New York Times bestseller that I probably wouldn't read because of the title. But
so, Kurt, this was a change in the schedule here of a 2-hour block of the quest, and that's going to be the case for the next 2 weeks. Is that correct?
Correct. We're down to, I believe, 6 paladins now, and next Thursday, the first Thursday of September, there are going to be 2 more back-to-back episodes, so we'll be down to, if it's a normal progression, 4 paladins, and then I believe the finale is slated for Thursday, September 11th.
Okay, so just in 2 weeks from last night's episode.
That's what my understanding is.
Okay. So, Kurt, you have a knowledge of all things numbers. You are the tabulator. Is this a good thing, bad thing, or a neutral thing for the future of the quest?
If I was to get out my magic 8-ball, or yours, I would say that things aren't necessarily, things may be pointing to no. This doesn't seem like it was in the plan originally. It seems like they're trying to get through the episodes quickly. I'm you know, got my fingers crossed that there will be like more spinoffs about this, but, I'm not so well versed in the TV slating of shows to know, you know, what I should be reading between the lines for when they suddenly start, you know, doubling up the episodes. It feels like they're trying to get through them quickly, and that doesn't necessarily bode well.
It feels a little bit unusual. Now, is it possible, though, that it could be Verlox messing with the schedule at ABC?
He's cast some sort of... Or it's like Big Brother, where they're trying to do the fast forward.
Yes,
but we're getting twice as many. It's like a whole week of the quest after an episode of the quest.
Yes. Okay. So we'll see exactly what ultimately happens with the quest. But until further notice, the finale of the quest will be 2 weeks from Thursday. So we'll have 2 more the quest wrap ups here as we go along. All right, so let's start off here. We've got a busy night. Only 2 people go home, though, in the 2 hours of the quest. We had Christian in the first hour, and then we had Adria in the second hour. So let's take it with just the first hour, and let's talk about that. First, Kurt, which hour did you prefer? Did you like the first hour or the second hour?
I believe that I liked the first hour better.
I did, too. I thought that the storyline about Christian and his strategy, I thought, was more interesting than the Easter egg hunt in the second hour.
See, I liked the challenge. If you compare, so I liked the Christian storyline better. I liked the actual challenge of the Easter egg hunt versus the
battering ram,
and the barricades, which I've seen like. I think like on Survivor, where you get to shore something up, and then I've definitely seen it like on the Real World Road Rules Challenge before. The Easter egg thing hunt was at least kind of a novel twist, and I found that more entertaining than that actual challenge. But the overall interaction of the players and the story and the rest was in the first episode I preferred overall.
Yeah, I thought overall the Christian thing was more interesting. I feel like that both the challenges had their pluses and minuses. I think I probably preferred the battering ram one a little bit, but you know, it's not you know, you say potato, I say potato type of thing.
Yeah, I won't fight you on this.
All right, let's start off with the ogre. And I'd love to get your take on what was going on there. So at the end of the last episode, last Thursday, we saw like, oh, it's an ogre. Ogre alert. Man your battle stations. So everybody is getting ready. And Sir Ansgar says, all right, everybody, go get the scorpion. Did the paladins ever have a chance in hell of putting the scorpion together?
I'm going to say no. My guess is that they didn't necessarily want... I mean, let's say worst case scenario. They actually put it together, and then they try to use it. And, you know, and everybody knows you don't fire into melee. You don't, you know, take that crossbow or take any sort of missile weapon and shoot it when your compadre is hand-to-hand combat with somebody else. So, I'm guessing that physically it wasn't actually possible to put that thing together.
Okay, so as they're futzing around with the scorpion, here comes Sir Ansgar to go mano a mano versus the ogre. Kurt, in your opinion, how did the ogre look to you?
It actually looked fine to me. It wasn't something that stuck out in my mind. I was more amused about the number of times that the ogre like just backhanded Ansgar across the face and sent him flying. So I was actually engrossed in the actual combat, and I couldn't tell you if it was necessary. I bought it, I guess. I didn't necessarily think it was bad, but I wasn't looking that closely at the actual structure of the ogre, I guess.
I didn't think the ogre looked great.
Yeah, it's funny that you mention it now. It's like I can't put together like a picture in my head of what the ogre actually looked like because I was more focused on the actual on the combat, but it wasn't that good.
You know, overall, I feel like the stuff in these effects in the show have been very, very good, but I felt like the ogre looked a little bit just like a guy in a costume.
Okay,
yeah, but it's a nitpick. I felt like he looks like kind of like some of the guys that were like hanging out with Jabba the Hutt in Return of the Jedi at like and yeah.
Yeah,
some of the guys that like are protectors of Jabba the Hutt, you know, not a big deal, but I'm sure the guy in the ogre costume appreciated that the paladins could not get the scorpion together. But I mean, if I was the guy in the ogre costume, I think I would have been, you know, pooping in my ogre costume that Shondo wasn't going to jump down and try to take me on one-on-one.
Yeah, no, I actually was thinking the same thing that I think Shondo was probably. Yeah, whoever Shondo's handler is in the show probably told him he's not allowed to leave that bridge structure.
Yeah, no, Shondo, stay where you are because, you know, once Shondo is like, you know, he goes into battle mode.
Like, do not enter the ogre enclosure.
yeah. So it's Sir Ansgar versus the ogre. Ansgar wins. Shondo says, you know, it's all about whooping the ogre with style.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's about? You want to get style points against the ogre?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's I think when you get those style points, you kind of feel that you did something awesome, and that just carries on to the next battle. So yeah, win it with style.
Does Shondo think that it's important to style for the ladies when you're fighting the ogre?
You know, I didn't necessarily get that impression. I don't think Shondo's out to impress one person or another. He just wants to do his best and get the dubs and whatever that means.
I thought he did give credit to Sir Ansgar that he not only beats an ogre, he also you know, looks good with the ladies when he does it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was I enjoyed the battle. I enjoyed the seeing Ansgar you know, post battle, and he seemed to be in his element. And it's, again, the whole good cop, bad cop thing with Ansgar. It's fun seeing good cop Ansgar.
Yeah. So when they get back, the vizier is, you know, not happy as usual. He's always pissed about something. The guy's just a negative guy.
It seems like they're really trying to construct this sort of traitorous, evil vizier edit. And I don't know if it's one of those things where they're trying to play into the normal trope of vizier being evil, or if they're trying to get us to believe that and they're going to pull the rug out from under us and Creo is going to be the bad guy.
So luckily, the ogre attack fit into Sir Ansgar's lesson plan very, very well.
I think I have some training in mind. And at that point, I was like, oh, we have to go through another training challenge.
More training. Yeah. You thought, oh, we're just going to learn how to get trained in the first couple episodes. And now we're going to really get into this.
Yeah. With the third episode pointed things in the right direction for me. But it seems like a couple of times now we've backslid a little into more training.
I think we're going to be training the whole series, Kurt.
Yeah.
So we're going to do the battering ram challenge, and we're going to pick two captains for the battering ram challenge. And so the two captains are going to be Christian and Lena.
Yes.
Okay. And there's going to be a very interesting strategic move here, and probably the most interesting strategic point that we're going to see on the quest, maybe the entire season. So Christian has to decide who to take on his team, and with his number one pick, he chooses Patrick over his boy Andrew.
Yeah, that surprised me. Not as much as his later decisions surprised me, but you know, those are you've got three big guys: Patrick, Andrew, and Shondo. And so it could be, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other, and then three times two if you have to do three options there. So I wasn't terribly surprised on the surface that he picked Patrick, but yeah, knowing that he's buddies with Andrew, that was the most surprising. He picked a big guy, so that's good, but he didn't pick Andrew, so like, what's going on?
And then ultimately, he also ends up with Adria and Bonnie, while Lena gets Leticia, Shondo, and Andrew.
Yeah, and wasn't Shondo last picked? Or I don't know if I took notes on this correctly.
Yeah, but it went by, the picks went by very quick after the first two picks.
Yeah, and so I know that Shondo, he picked Adria over Shondo. And he may have even picked Bonnie over Shondo, depending on how correct my notes are. But he picked Adria over Shondo, which just immediately raised my eyebrow as well.
Now, did it have to be a co-ed thing? Was it like, do you have to pick like male-female?
I don't know. We weren't told that.
Okay.
Well,
then that really calls his draft strategy into a lot of question, to take Adria over Shondo.
Right. I don't know. It was just questionable.
And it was interesting how they did this, because they just said, this is how he's doing it. And he says, I'm doing it for a reason. But it's not really until later in the episode we find out that Christian chose his team this way because he knew that if he had all of his friends on the other team, they would then save him. And it seems like somewhere along the way, he let this get out of hand, because I thought this was a really brilliant strategy, but I think that somewhere along the way, the message got twisted.
Yeah, it's a couple things. A, it does seem from a later point in the show that somebody mentioned word has been getting around that Christian picked his team, or that Christian picked his team to lose. So he said something to somebody and it got out. And the second thing is, it's not exactly a strategy that you can implement surreptitiously without people being suspicious. And that, I think, was like, so that doubleheader of things did not, you know, bode well for him.
And it seems like almost everybody, to a man and a woman, was offended by what Christian did. And
yeah.
And, you know, I'm not really sure why. You know, if Christian could have taken Shondo and Andrew and Lena aside and Leticia said, hey, I'm throwing the challenge so you guys will be safe tonight.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like that was what was going to happen. It seems like the way this got out was, oh, I picked you guys because you all suck and I have friends on the other tribe and I know they'll save me because you guys are so bad and nobody likes you guys. Those are all my friends. I know they're going to pick me. And it seems like that's how the message got out. And that does not seem like that was the right way to do that.
Right. And then there's kind of the added bonus of this being his fourth time, I think, in the Fate Club. And the fact that it seems like more and more people are now starting to, you know, jump on the bandwagon of the ideal, the ideal perspective of, we want someone who's going to be the hero and we want someone who's going to express hero-like behaviors. So I think it was like a perfect storm of everything going wrong. Like, just pick the team you think will help you win.
Yeah, I think just the messaging got away from Christian.
Yeah.
And so it probably would have been better off to go ahead and, you know, just try to pick the best team to win. But I think he was trying to play the alliance game.
Yeah. And you know what? He could have picked. Here's the thing. If you pick Andrew first, I mean, and I'm not going to, you know, do a draft pick here. But if you pick Andrew first and your team happens to lose, then you know that at least there's a 50-50 shot that, you know, if Andrew ends up winning that Fates challenge, he's going to go into the deliberation anyway and potentially get to save you. So he should have just stuck to his guns and done what was right to win.
Okay, so I think that probably what he should have done is just take Shondo number one. And then, you know, if Andrew ends up on the other team, then that's an ace in the hole. So maybe just don't be as obvious about throwing it. Because when you do that, then everybody gets pissed off at you. I go back to in Survivor the Amazon, just to go back to my personal experience with this. We had the challenge, which was almost like the old coconut chop challenge, the challenge where you have to cut the ropes on your thing, and then everybody gets a chance, if they get the question right, that they get to cut your thing. And I figured out from watching the show and from seeing Survivor Marquesas, so if you get a question right and I say, okay, I'm going to cut Kurt's rope, when you get a question right, you say, well, Rob, gotta pay you back. I owe you one. So I said, okay, I just won't get any questions right and nobody will cut my ropes and then I'll be fine. But there was a question that came up, and the question was, what is a Bushmaster? Is it A, a snake, B, a whatever, C, whatever, D, a nature guide? And I selected D, a nature guide, because I wanted to not only throw the challenge, but I wanted the people at home to say, oh, look what a smart strategist this is. Rob is obviously throwing the challenge. And Jeff called me out on it, and I said, I thought a Bushmaster was a porn star. And Jeff really got mad, and everybody's like, oh, this guy. And every one, two, three, my ropes got cut and I'm out of the challenge. So I think when you try to get, you're throwing the challenge, but you also want to say, look how smart I am. I think this tends to not go your way on a reality TV show.
Yeah. We've seen in Big Brother this summer how throwing challenges goes too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's an art to it.
2014 is not the season, not the year of challenge throwing.
Yes. It's not the year of throwing the challenges. And even on, you know, there's a million different ways on tons of different shows where it backfires of throwing these challenges. So Christian will add him to the challenge throwing Hall of Fame. So we end up getting into the challenge, and Lena's team actually does a really, really good job. And Andrew ends up being able to work very well with Shondo, and they make a really good sort of barricade. And then, meanwhile, on the other side, it looks like third graders just put a bunch of stuff in front of the door.
Yeah, that's whenever I have had to move stuff to move to like a new apartment or anything, that's pretty much what the moving truck looks like. Is that right there is pretty much it.
It looks like a barricade in case they try to get into it with a battering ram.
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of thrown in there haphazardly. Not going to be much good for anything. Probably fall down at any moment and injure somebody.
Okay, so as the challenge is going along, we're seeing, you know, Shondo and Leticia and all these like people with all this strength. They're using the battering ram, and you know they're just sort of like, you know, they're getting there, they're getting through it. Meanwhile, the team with Christian is really struggling. Now Christian tries to stick his hand in, or like he gets like a stick, and he's gonna try to like prop up the thing that's blocking the door, and Sir Ansgar loses it.
Yeah, especially because I think he just warned them like 20 seconds before that the only thing they can use is the battering ram. Because I think Shondo maybe tried to do something first. And so Ansgar's like, no, he can only use the ram. And that's when Christian went in and was basically defying the rules. I mean, that might have been an editing thing, but he definitely got a tongue lashing there.
Yes. Christian, what did I just say? What did I just tell you? Get out! He's so mad. Was that the most mad we've seen Sir Ansgar this season?
Yeah, I think even Leticia losing her part of the crucial sun rod or whatever.
No,
he didn't even get as angry then as he did with this.
Yes, yes. You get the impression that maybe Sir Ansgar and possibly production might have been at their wits' end with Christian because, you know, his plan should have worked. You wonder if, you know, the, you know, if people, you know, when I hear something on one of these shows where it's like, well, we heard a rumor that, you know, and it's something that didn't happen on the screen, it makes me say, where did somebody hear that from? And did it happen off camera? Was that sort of like a question from a, from producers? Like, so do you think Christian is throwing the challenge to...
That's an interesting thing. You can't, you don't necessarily say that, like, there's no really real way for this to kind of happen in Big Brother. I guess, you know, Jeff can ask questions at tribal council, but here, if production has an issue, they have a whole cast of actors. Like, there could have been a scullery maid that was cleaning Letitia's room and had, oh, m'lady, did you happen to hear this?
Yes.
I mean, it's like they can plant seeds that way as well. If production has a point that they want to get across, they have a whole cast of characters, you know.
I don't know why I'm being a pirate. But yeah, that's a good point, because the whole show is about finding the one true hero. So yes. It's like if somebody backstabs their way to winning Big Brother, if Tony, you know, lies to everybody to win Survivor, hey, that's Survivor, that's Big Brother. But if the goal of the show is we need to find the one true hero of Everrealm, and you got this one guy being like, yeah, I'm going to throw this challenge because all my friends are on the other team. I know they're going to vote to save me. It's like, you know, we can't have that.
Yeah. It's like when the Bachelor or Bachelorette discovers that one of the contestants has a boyfriend or girlfriend back home, and while, you know, the host never steps in to actually say anything, you do end up somehow the other cast members find out, and they're the ones that reveal it to the main person on the show.
Yeah, Christian might have outsmarted himself with this one.
Yes.
So eventually, the team from Lena and Shondo and those guys, they get through the barricade, and somebody has to get the medal, Kurt. And this time, it's going to be Lena. Lena!
Yeah. Yes, she got the Mark of Ingenuity.
Not the most impressive mark.
No, not the most impressive. But she then also... They also got to go and watch a special screening of How to Get Away with Murder airing this fall.
Yes, yes.
And wait, all... no, that didn't happen, did it?
Yeah, they projected it right where all the other people, all the other eliminated paladins, they had projected it on the same wall.
We are channeling the spirits of the American Broadcasting Company.
Yes.
We have, yeah.
That Shonda Rhimes, come in. Okay. Anyway, so we get Lena with the Mark of Ingenuity, and now four people are going to go to Fate Club. Now, did you like this better with four people going to see the Fates? I thought it was going to be a double eviction. I thought two people were going to go home then.
I was wondering if that was going to be how it worked out. I didn't know if one person was going to get saved and then the other two people would go home, or how that would actually end up working out. So I was wondering. There's a part of me for a while that until the Fates actually say at one point, one of you will go home, and it, like right before I think they go off to deliberation, or even like right before the challenge, they may have said it. But when I heard that there was going to be four, it's like, will one get saved or will two get saved? So I wasn't sure how it was going to play out.
Okay. So we have some more sword play. I'm not sure exactly why everybody was sword fighting afterwards. I guess it was just something to do.
But first, more sword training.
Before, yeah. So Patrick is, you know, he's getting really angry with Christian. He's just like, you know, burning out some aggression with Christian. And the women, they're also doing their sword fighting between Bonnie and Adria. And there's a lot of talk about Christian and a lot of talk about, like, what an a-hole really Christian is.
Yeah. It almost seems like at the deliberation, everybody's being very diplomatic when they're around that stone table in the woods before they vote. And it's really this point maybe between the challenge and them leaving for a Fate Club that we actually get to see a little bit more unfiltered what their actual opinion is.
Yeah. Shondo says about Christian that this guy, he's got excuse 1, 2, and 3 ready before you even ask the question.
Yeah. And that seems like a fair assessment.
Okay. So word seems to have quickly spread about what Christian did, and nobody is like, boy, that was a good idea.
Yeah.
So when they get to the Fate Club, there's just a key hanging from the ceiling. And so we're like, uh-oh, what's going on here? And we have a very interesting challenge, Kurt. I don't think I've ever seen a challenge like this on a reality show.
I don't know if I saw a challenge on this reality show. It was really dark and hard to make out, to be completely honest.
Yeah, you know what? I watched it on my Slingbox. I actually, typically I watch this on the East Coast feed, and this was the first time I got to watch it recorded. So I actually watched it at a better quality than I've ever gotten to see it before. But I still had to like make the brightness as bright as I could on my computer to be able to really see what was going on.
Yeah, so it was the basic concept was there was this obstacle course that they had to navigate through, but they were all in an iron cage, which was going to make that maneuvering more difficult, right?
Yes. This is sort of like, you know, go through an obstacle course with like a garbage pail on your head. Now,
yes.
Did you think this was a fair challenge for two men and two women to compete in? I felt like this challenge really favored the men.
I'd say, especially in comparison to how, like we've talked a little bit about how the main challenge that happens before they go to the Fates, how that has been, some of those have been more physical, some of those have been more mental, some of the, whatever. It seems like up to this point, the Fates challenges have been pretty neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that definitely that this was much more, especially just the way they were talking about the weight of the cage made me think that there was no way that Adria or Bonnie was going to win this.
Yeah. So,
actually, I thought it favored potentially Christian, who probably has the strength to move the cage easily, but also a little bit more agility and to maneuver within the cage than Patrick, who's bigger. But Patrick could also just, like, momentum-wise, plow through things.
Yeah, I don't think that agility really factored into this too much because the cage was the size of the cage. So I think this was just a pure strength challenge. Right.
Well, I meant like from agility, I meant Christian had more room to maneuver and turn himself around in the cage and to like hold onto the bars and to adjust his grip and get situated than I think Patrick necessarily did because he had less room to maneuver in there. But so I figured it was going to come down to either Patrick or Christian, and I was rooting for Patrick, and just to see what would happen in the finale. But it didn't seem like Bonnie or Adria had a chance, although Adria at one point seemed like she said that she was catching up to Christian or almost up in a pass Christian.
Okay. So Patrick ends up winning the challenge. Christian comes in second. And Bonnie is like, everybody's like, where is Bonnie? Yeah. Bonnie's still out there, right? Like, she's still there, right? Did she already finish? Oh, she's still out there? And she's like stuck on the first obstacle. And then you just hear her scream, and then everybody comes out and has to try to save her. And I thought she was going to have to get medevaced out of the game.
What would medevac in the Ever Realm look like?
They bring out like the cart and they just wheel you away.
Bring out your dead.
Take her to the healer. Where's the healer? Keep that guy on speed dial. Yeah.
The hag from episode 3 comes in and yeah.
Okay, so they end up taking Bonnie, and what happened? She like hurt her thumb. That seemed a little dramatic for hurting your thumb.
At one point, for some reason, I thought maybe just the camera work. I thought that they were trying to imply that like the cage she was in rolled down the hill while she was in it or something. I couldn't tell exactly what happened.
Your TV might have been a little dark, Kurt.
Yeah. It's I guess she was on the ground, and it sounds like that she thought that she broke her hand or her thumb. Maybe if she was down, it could have been barely easily that the cage rolled over on top of her hand, the metal did. And maybe that is what happened.
Okay. So they check on Bonnie, and she's going to be okay. And so now it's time for everybody else to decide who they're going to keep. Patrick says that Bonnie has heart. And especially after the injury, I felt like this was a lot of sympathy for Bonnie to stay after what happened.
Right. And they even called back to the hag episode where Bonnie and Christian were stuck in dead last, and they kind of agreed to help each other get through the doors and the hag challenge, where Bonnie stopped what she was doing to help Christian, and Christian pretended to stop what he was doing and help Bonnie. So they also brought that back as a reason why she's like really willing to help other people. So, you know, Patrick and Bonnie have been pretty tight since the very first episode, like from a brother sisterly way. So I had no doubt that Patrick was going to have Bonnie's back here.
Okay, and Letitia is talking about some of the good things about Adria. And then there's sort of an interesting thing that happens when Andrew speaks up. And what does Andrew say?
He said, like, we have to understand that this isn't about friendship. And then I think it was Letitia who said to him, well, do you understand that?
I had it was Lena in my notes, but okay. it is dark in that part. And so she's like, yeah. Do you understand that, Andrew? And he's like, yeah, no, actually, like he was like ready to vote for Christian to stay up until that point, I think.
I think so, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. So Bonnie knows that she's going to at least have Patrick stand behind her.
Yeah.
That's the one true alliance.
Yes.
Patrick and Bonnie.
One true alliance. Nice.
And Patrick, he got like a really big, like, you know, shot to the eye in this episode.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah. He took it like a man, though.
Yeah, he's fine.
Okay.
He shrugged it off.
And so everybody goes and stands behind them. And I will say just one note on this. It is extremely dark when they do this. And it's very hard to tell who goes and stands behind who.
Right. You see a silhouette kind of walking.
Yeah.
And occasionally it's like it's when they cut to that over the shoulder view. So you see Bonnie's face and then they have him kind of angled out to the side. So in that shot, you get to see progressively all the people behind her. That's like the best point in which to tell who's there. But I'm guessing that they ask the contestants between deliberation and that point who they're going to vote for. Just like, you know, they arranged the votes for Jeff to read in the most dramatic way. Wondering, they probably knew that there was no doubt in the producer's mind Patrick was going for Bonnie. He confirmed it, I'm guessing. And that's probably why they had him go first. And then it just kind of goes down from there is what I'm guessing happened.
Yeah, but it's very hard to tell what's going on in that scene because I always thought it was me because I watched the show on the East Coast feed on the Slingbox and it's sort of like a grainy quality watching it live on Thursday night. But this was the first time I got to watch it on DVR and I was watching it at perfect quality and I still had a hard time of telling who was going to go stand behind unless they're trying to leave it sort of nebulous. But even when they turn around, I'm like, I can't tell who has the most people behind them.
Right. So, yeah, production note for season two, a little bit more light in the Fates challenge from soup to nuts. It's overall pretty dark in there.
Yeah. Or could we get like a vote count, like sort of like, all right, that's two votes. Like, I know they want it to be a big surprise for the people that are the paladins, but I think we got to be a little bit more in the loop. Like, you know, when Jeff is counting the votes, all right, that's two votes, Christian, two votes, Bonnie, one vote. Let's see, they'll have the last paladin walk in now. I feel like that would be more helpful and dramatic.
Or even the voiceover of the person as they're walking up there. Like, I chose to stand behind Bonnie. As Patrick walks up to behind Bonnie, he's like, I chose to stand behind
even
Bonnie
better.
For this reason.
Yeah. Even better. Yeah. Okay, that's, Kurt, you fixed it.
Okay, done. Done and done.
Good. Then I can sort of be able to. So it's a little confusing, that part. You know, not a deal breaker, but a little confusing. Yeah. Okay. So Christian turns around and he sees the betrayal, the ultimate backstab on the quest.
The teacher's like, hello. She's the only one behind him.
Yeah. I guess Christian takes it pretty well, right?
Yeah. I did. I like Letitia's little narrative line for the viewer of, you know, Christian turned around and saw Andrew standing in a different line. Yeah, that happened. And what did you think about her thought process of everyone deserves to see at least one person standing behind them when they turn around?
Yeah.
Because that's what she said. She stood behind Christian.
Hey, that's the attitude of the one true hero, Kurt.
That's true.
Yes.
That's true. The one true hero who loses her part of the Sun Spear.
Did you feel like Christian really felt that he compromised some of his integrity?
No.
Do you feel like he just felt like he had to say that?
Yeah. I think he played the game how he wanted to play the game, and I don't think he necessarily took any life lessons away from this, and I don't think he necessarily should.
Yeah,
I mean, it was one way to choose to play this game, and I mean, it would have been a perfect approach for maybe a different game. So I hope you never change, Christian. Keep on keeping on.
All right, so afterwards, everybody gets to hang out for a little bit. And so Sir Ansgar is being a bro with all of the other paladins at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And with Lady Patrick.
Yes. Why is he calling him Lady Patrick?
I think it's because with the bruised eye, it looked like he had maybe like makeup on, like mascara on over his eye or something. That's the only thing I could think of.
I don't know. Is Ansgar a misogynist?
I don't think so, because he went over to Bonnie for a thumb inspection and treated her positively about it. So,
okay.
And I don't get the sense that he's a misogynist. He's been very complimentary to both genders when they do well in a challenge.
Okay.
He's been pretty gender neutral, from what I can tell.
Lady Ansgar or Lady Patrick strikes me as a little bit of a derogatory insult.
Well, see, I thought it was simply because it looked like he was wearing mascara.
Okay, we'll have to investigate that more. Otherwise, Sir Ansgar has a pretty sparkling record.
Yes.
And so, what did you think, Kurt, of the Sir Ansgar ballad?
I liked it, actually. I liked how. I mean, I'm a big fan of Bonnie. I liked how in an earlier episode this season she sang something that was just, you know, very nice, a kind of a ballad. And then this was more of a, you know, a drunken tavern song that got everybody involved singing Raise Your Glass. And so, yeah, I really liked it, actually. I thought it was a nice tribute to Ansgar. Although, yeah. I'm liking Ansgar more and more. I kind of want to see him and Giles in like a buddy cop show or something.
Yeah. And that was a pretty cool moment. I did enjoy that. Yes. Now, is that Bonnie's thing that she writes these like Raise Your Glass ballads?
Yeah, this is the second one that we've seen. So I think that's kind of something that she just enjoys doing.
Okay. And so, meanwhile, you know, every time it looks like everybody's about to just have fun and kick back. Now, what is this thing? There's like a drone flying around?
Yes, it's an unmanned drone.
What is that called? A spy orb?
Yep, a spy orb. It's an invention of Verloc's. Verloc's the darkness. Okay. In case you were thinking it was different.
And what does a spy orb do?
I'm guessing it's an orb that spies, like goes, like floats through. And like if you had an unmanned drone with a camera on it, I'm guessing that's what a spy orb is. It's that it can go into an enemy outpost and just scope out the defenses.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know from 24 Live Another Day, a spy orb would be very bad.
Yes.
King Heller has to shut this down.
Although I don't think these are weaponized. There were separate fire orbs from the spy orbs. And so I think if you could somehow combine those into an Uber orb, then you'd have some real 24 like danger on your hands.
The Uber orb, is that the one that comes and picks you up and gives you a ride wherever you need to go in Everrealm?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So I was going to get into President Heller talking about Sir Ansgar like Jack Bauer, but it wouldn't be the same without Josh.
Oh, yeah. And save that for him.
I'll save that for him if he's watching. If he's watching the quest. Okay. So, all right. So they send half the people to go with Kriya. Now, this is the start of the second episode. And they had to, you know, did the whole opening sequence again. I don't know if we needed that. It was, I fast forwarded through the recap of the intro sequence and the intro of what we just watched. I understand why it's there, but we have to send three of the people to go with Creo and half of the other people to go and look for the spy orb or figure out what's going on because they find a fire orb.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out. Well, they know that if there's a spy orb here, someone close is controlling it. And so they're trying. So I think some people try to keep an eye on the orb, but some people try to look for a suspicious person who, I'm guessing, you look for somebody that's hooded. And sure enough, they find a hooded figure that takes off running when asked to stop. And so, okay, this must be a bad person that's associated with the spy orb.
Yeah.
So Ansgar basically, again, I think this is where Shondo's handler was like, just let Ansgar handle this.
Yeah, let him handle this. And so they find this guy and they sort of unmask him. And he's a guy that is, Ansgar seems to know, but we don't really know who he is. And now we're trying to figure out who is this guy. I thought it was, is this the Queen's brother? I'm trying to figure out who is the person that we've heard referenced, but we haven't seen.
I was wondering if it was the Queen's brother, but they referred to him as a person by the name of Hera. And we later find out in the episode that it's just a former soldier companion of Ansgar's. They were like brothers on the battlefield.
Now, what's wrong with this guy? Why is he looking like he has the zombie virus?
He looks like one of the people from The Strain. He looks like Gabriel from The Strain.
Yes.
To be honest. And I'm guessing that once you give your allegiance over to someone as evil as Verloc's the Darkness, it just begins to take over your whole persona.
Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Verloc's should, like, you should get, like, more attractive. That would be a good selling point. Like, it's like come join me and you'll be uglier.
Yeah, maybe there's like a good dental plan we don't know about yet.
Maybe you get something. Maybe you just get a lot of money.
There you go.
He has a lot of gold. Okay, So we end up sending everybody out to go look for seven orbs. And
because he had one on him that Ansgar was able to deftly diffuse. And I just loved the sound that it made when he diffused it. It was like, pew! Like something electronic and very 21st century when the fire orb was decommissioned.
Yeah. And the paladins very quickly said, oh, seven orbs, there's seven of us. It must mean something. But it didn't seem like that really meant too much.
Except that there was a challenge that did play into it.
Yeah. then they found three.
Yep.
And so there are four that are still missing. I'm not sure why we couldn't have just said, oh, there are four fire orbs. So
yeah, that would have been like a nice little shortcut in the narrative.
Yeah. Seems like that the investigators really didn't look that hard, because some of these probably should have been somewhat easy to find, right?
Yeah.
Considering some that they have like a light bulb in them.
And I'm just trying to tie it back to the narrative. It's like, well, there's seven missing. We need to find a few of them to at least show that they, yes, are indeed in the castle. And so if you just had four missing, but you never were able to, you might have just suspected they were there. By finding a few of them, you then confirm that the rest are there, and then that sets up the challenge.
Yeah, there wasn't really a lot of urgency, I felt like, on the part of Ansgar, of that there are basically four grenades that are four live remote control detonated grenades in the walls of the castle. And it's sort of like, all right, Lena, you found one. You're good. All right, let's hang out. So what do you think? What do you think about what's going on?
Stop looking.
Yeah, don't look for any more now. Like, let everybody have a turn to find one.
There's a little bit of a Mary Poppins moment within Snap. The job's a game. And then, so you know, it's really negative consequences about to happen. But you know what? This is the perfect thing that we could turn into a challenge for our paladins.
Yes. All right. So let's jump into this. So what'd you think of then? They had the falcon. I was a little confused about what was going on. So it's like, we have a falcon. And the falcon looked for everywhere for the things. So go upstairs, put the falcon 3D glasses on. So go ahead and wear those. And then you'll be able to see what the falcon saw.
Yeah, they're like fancy Oculus Rift type headgear that allowed you to... I'm really curious what that experience was like. Like, was it just one of those old... You know,
viewmaster
things where you can advance the slides with a flick on the side, or if it was actually like a film playing in there, or how that ended up working. But yeah, I guess I don't know if these falcons were trained to sniff out fire orbs, but apparently you put on the mask and you got to see where the fire orb was if you stuck around long enough to actually see the entire scene play out.
Yeah. That took me out of it a little bit. That's why I like the first challenge first. It was like, wait, what is it? They're looking at it, putting on glasses, and there's like a movie playing in the glasses.
See, I was like, this is the first time they're tying magic into the realm. I was making it more like a magical device than anything else. And I thought that was kind of fun. Okay. And it was kind of like, I like the...
Well, you're more whimsical than I am.
Whimsy is my middle name. And it reminded me a little bit of like a challenge you would see on The Mole or something, where everybody's trying to, is like this madcap rushing around. If somebody gets something first, then you can't go to that one again.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did something about it.
You know what it was like? It was like on Whodunit when they have the challenge to find the clue.
Yeah.
What did they call that round?
The puzzle round.
Yeah, the puzzle round. And then the bell rings like, ding, 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 ding. All right. Like, all right, everybody stop. Everybody stop. Only Gino gets to look at the eagle now. That was a little bit what that was like. Okay.
That's true. So that's why I liked it.
Maybe. Everybody gets to run around. Andrew, his ADHD is really holding him back in this challenge because he can't wait to finish watching the video. As soon as he identifies the room, he just runs to go, I know that place.
That's the Battle Dome.
Yeah. And so everybody runs around. I wrote in my notes, I thought that Tony from Survivor would be good at this.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
See
it's
that?
Like finding idols, finding.
Okay. Yeah, this has been the ultimate Russell versus Tony challenge.
Yeah, look, I'm set up. I got my spot check, and I'd go by where the eagle is, and Cass, she was talking eagle, and I was like, la, 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 la. And then, yeah, he could go and find, he'd go right for finding the thing. Like, yeah. I taught Everrealm all up, and Sir Ansgard, I told him I got the fire orb, and I'm ready to go.
And I can see him also, like, hiding it, like, in under a cloak or in a helmet or something, and not letting somebody know that he found it, letting them continue to search fruitlessly in an area.
I found another one of the fire orbs. I took it. I hid it in another place. They're never going to find it. I'm not going to the Fates tonight.
Got my bag of tricks.
I got my bag of tricks. I got all my medallions, and I'm ready to go. Yeah, Tony would be great on the quest.
Yeah.
I'm the one true hero.
Like, enough of these, like, Survivor and Amazing Race crossovers. Let's get, like, a Survivor and the Quest crossover.
Let's get, yeah, Tony and Wu out there. I think that would be that would be great. And could you imagine Cass out there too?
Yes. Yes, I can.
All right. So everybody's running around, and Lena finds an orb. Bonnie finds an orb. Adria is, like, looking all over the place. She goes to the one place where nobody else is, and she, like, runs away from where the orb is. Shondo finds an orb. And then who finds the last one? Is it...
you got them all. Lena, Bonnie, Patrick.
Patrick.
Patrick found the one that Adria overlooked.
Yeah. And so Shondo, that he's very careful with this fire orb because he doesn't want to blow up, because it's very important to him to have an open casket funeral.
Yes.
All right. So after this happens, they're like, all right, let's go interrogate Hana. Is that his name?
Hera.
Hera.
Oh, but you missed, Lena got her second mark, like two marks. She got the mark of observation for being the first person to back with a fire orb.
Okay. So what did you think of the mark of observation?
Like, the mark of ingenuity plus the mark of observation maybe equals the mark of dexterity. They gave away the few big ones early on, I think.
So, and what do you do with the marks at the end?
Well, the first three people to win marks were Bonnie and two other, Shondo and maybe Christian, and they got to pick their teams for the Battle Dome challenge.
Okay.
So those three marks indicated they were kind of team captains. Even we don't know what further marks are going to do, but Lena has two of them.
All right, I'm holding out for the marks of Solera. That's what I'm holding out for. Okay, so then, after that, we're going to go and check out what Hera is doing. And so that we go into his cell and we're like, hey, what's going on here, Hera? What are you up to? And he's like, oh, there's so many people that work for Verlox behind the walls, right?
Yeah, I think just because they captured him, there's others that are continuing the work of Verlox.
Yes. And so, for the first time they check his bag, it seems like that would have been something that they would have done early on, right?
Yeah, I guess maybe they don't have, like, a crime scene, you know, process that they follow strictly here, but, like, they typically don't carry wallet, so maybe it just tends to be overlooked. But yeah, check his pockets, check his bag.
Yeah, I would have checked his pockets. I would have frisked him.
Yeah.
I said, hey, this guy, this guy looks like a bad guy. I'd frisk this guy. And so where do we find a bunch of pieces of the map that are cut up into squares?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe.
It seemed like then they immediately tried to piece it together.
Literally. Yes.
Yes.
Do you think that Hera just sucks at folding the map up? Is he like, how do you fold it? This is so annoying. I'm just going to cut these pieces up.
Or it's just like that one map that's in the glove compartment that after so many years of having it folded.
Oh, he folded it.
It just starts to come apart at the seams.
It's like perforated.
Exactly.
And so, all right, they have all the different pieces of the map, and the paladins are trying to figure out what to do with it, and they're like, oh, it seems like it's actually two different maps. And no.
Two different scales.
Yeah, it's two different scales. It's actually two maps in one. Like, I don't know.
It just seemed like the map was incomplete. And at one point, I think they just stopped.
Yeah, that was sort of like, it looks like you're trying to put a map together.
And it looked like that would have been so annoying to do in terms of, like, too many cooks in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, seven people trying to put together a 16-piece map. I would have, like, just stepped back and said, two of you do this, just two, and you'll make our lives a lot easier.
So then something super shady happened. Creo came in and said, hey, the Fates said for me to take all the pieces of the map and go bring them to him. And I was waiting for them to go to the Fates, and the Fates say, hey, did Creo bring you the map? Like, oh, we don't know what you're talking about. Like, Creo! But apparently it was on the level.
I was getting major Wiggler Mole Patrol vibes when that happened. Exactly.
All right, but they're talking about who they're going to vote for. Shondo tells us he's a lone wolf. Ow!
Yes, he is.
Yeah. He's the best, Shondo.
Good old Shondo.
Yes. So it's getting ready for Fate Club. It's going to be either Adria, Leticia, or Andrew.
Yes.
Okay. And so here's the task tonight. And I really kind of was a little confused about how this was going to work. So there are 9 swords, or was it 9 or was it 13?
I didn't know how many there specifically were. But
there's a bunch of swords. There's a bunch of swords, and they all have a hole on the end. And then you have to line up the swords. So a freaking laser beam is going to shoot through and then tell us where. It's like a Raiders of the Lost Ark type thing. And then
there's like the Well of Souls.
Yes. And the freaking laser beam is going to tell us where Verlox is going to strike next.
Right. It's like because the Kingdom of Sanctum is in the middle of the 12 kingdoms of Everrealm. And it was going to show where on these, like, basically where on the border was Verlox going to basically be entering and striking a sanctum. So it would highlight where Verlox was going to attack from.
Yeah. Now, I don't exactly know how they were able to triangulate this information from just finding a map that they obviously had to put together and hang up somewhere in the room and then set up laser beams to point at it. Like, it's not like in Indiana Jones where he like had the staff and then was able to put the top of the staff in the right place. And then when the sun shone through at the right time. So I don't really exactly know, but I'm not going to worry about that, Kurt.
Hera probably had a second jacket that had 27 swords in it and some crystals and some holes to put the swords in. And it was a whole setup that he actually had with him.
Okay. And did everybody's laser beam point to the same spot on the map?
We never got to see that, because I think basically what happened was that the laser beam would only turn on. There are a couple points where people got up and tried to figure out how do you turn the laser beam on. I think the laser beam only activated once you had all the swords in the right order from lowest to highest in terms of height.
How do you turn on the frickin' laser beam?
A couple of them were wondering that, actually.
Yeah. Okay, so it ends up with Andrew is the person who gets his freaking laser beam on, and we can see exactly where Verlox is going to strike next.
From the west.
Yes. But
I actually did like this challenge. I thought it was going to be like very simple at first, that it was, you know, just put them in order from shortest to tallest, but then you find out that the depths of the holes vary across the swords, and so you know, that you had to take that into account, and that could actually be a very difficult puzzle. So I thought that was an interesting puzzle to have.
Yeah. You always want to find out about the depths of the hole.
Yes. You don't want to plumb the depths with too short of a sword.
That's right. Okay. So Andrew figures that out, and he is the person that gets the laser beam, and he is saved. And then very quickly, it's turning into, who are we going to save? Adria or Leticia?
Right.
Okay. And so, anything interesting from this deliberation?
It seemed like we knew that Lena was going to have Leticia's back. It seemed like, and I thought that Bonnie and Patrick were going to have Adria's back. And I didn't know where Shondo and Andrew were going to stand necessarily. It was The deliberations, like I said, the deliberations, they don't tell me so much, because everybody seems to try to be diplomatic about things. It's really, I think, the conversations that take place pre-Fate Club that point things out a little bit more. What I did think was interesting was that this was, I believe, the second time that Andrew has been the quote-unquote deciding vote in the social vote thing that happens.
Okay. And so, Kurt, were you disappointed to see Adria be the one to go home or go into the limbo?
I wasn't necessarily. I liked Adria, but I also liked Letitia. It's actually at a point where I like all of the players that are left. I think I've been on board the Letitia train more this season than the Adria train.
Choo-choo!
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, give me Letitia for the one true hero over Adria. I'm not liking Adria's chances head-to-head versus Verlox anytime soon.
She seems like the spunky sidekick maybe a little bit more. She's like the Gabrielle to Letitia Xena.
Yeah.
To throw a reference out there.
Okay. Yeah. I think that sounds good. How about this? Could she be Willow to a Buffy?
We could throw out a bunch of nerd references right now if you want to. We can go back and forth. But exactly.
Does mine check out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it does.
There you go. Yeah. So, yeah, she's probably a good Robin to a Batman, maybe. Or a Batwoman in Letitia's case.
Yes.
I don't want to say that Adria does not have ovaries, because she most clearly does.
Yeah, she's a good Sam to Letitia's Frodo.
Yes. Or are they going to say a good Sam to Letitia's Jon Snow?
Who's this?
What? Kurt, you said you're up to season 3.
I finished season 2. I did. I was being a smartass.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Now, again, we're going to party with Sir Ansgar. It's like every episode ends with let's hang out. Let's bro down for a little bit.
And I was waiting. Okay, who's going to die now from poison?
Yeah, somebody, you know, something bad is going to happen. And so it starts off all fun. Like Sir Ansgar's like, who's drinking tonight? Who's drinking? And so everybody gets a cup of wine. Everybody's like, man, it's so awesome to get to hang out with Sir Ansgar for a little bit. And so somebody asks Sir Ansgar.
I think it was Letitia.
Yeah. So what's going on with you and the women?
Is there a Mrs. Ansgar in your life?
Yeah. Well,
not anymore, apparently.
Well, at first it started off with I thought Sir Ansgar was hitting on Bonnie a little bit.
Yeah, I've gotten that vibe a little bit, like between the thumb investigation and is her hand okay, and it could have been seen like that. Yeah,
I think Sir Ansgar has a thing for Bonnie, and then somebody asks like, "Hey, Sir Ansgar, what's going on with you?" And he's like, "You know, I had a wife. She was pretty," and then he gets into it and says, "We had a." You know,
are there any little Ansgars in your life?
Yeah, that, you know, at the point where he said I had a wife, I think I would have let that go. But you know, paladins are going to pry.
And as a fan of improv, I do wonder to what extent were the players asked to probe on this at any point, or is this literally the actor playing Ansgar just knew his background and was able to improvise on this? Which I'm hoping it was the second one, and it felt a little bit like it might have been, but I actually liked this moment, even though he did kind of harsh the buzz of the entire party after the...
See, I think it was more the first one. I think when he starts asking, so Bonnie, what's going on with you? You seeing anybody? I think he's inviting that question to be asked back to him in return.
Okay.
That's what I think, because it seemed like an odd point for him to start asking the paladins about, so who's single?
Well, he has been drinking.
He has been drinking. All right. And so the guard is down.
At least he didn't ask if they were also ready to mingle.
Yes. Hey, paladins, are you guys single and ready to mingle tonight? Is any paladins or is anybody seeing anybody? Is anybody ready to go? What are you willing to do? How far are you willing to go in the quest?
Are you the one true hero?
Are you the one true hero this season? Would you rather win the quest and have all of Everrealm hate you, or be beloved and not win the game? What would you rather have? So then we have the million-dollar question of, so Sir Ansgar, how did you know Hera?
Yeah.
And, long story.
Yeah. Settle in, folks.
Funny you should ask. So apparently he was like Sir Ansgar's brother, but then something happened. They saved each other's lives, but then he took his money and his gold, and then Sir Ansgar ratted him out. Is that what happened?
No, I think that what he was saying was that Verlox that he turned on Ansgar and the queen for gold. That Verlox, that he was tempted to the other side by money.
Okay,
that's what I took away from it.
Okay, so that's what ended up happening, and he's been gone for a long time. But yes. Now they're like, "Well, what do we do now, Sir Ansgar?" And he's like, "We party, we party." Like, it seems like a turn for Sir Ansgar. It seems like he's all business, but tonight he's like, all right, tonight we're not worried about the 12 kingdoms tonight, 13 kingdoms. We're partying.
He's still riding the high from the ogre defeat.
Yes, yes. But bad news, Verlox is here.
And that's, yeah, because there's something was happening. I'm not sure if there was explosions or a siren, or just it was a typical big to do noise wise at the end of the episode. And yeah, Verlox is here.
Yeah,
I don't know what this means for us.
All right, Kurt, only 4 episodes left of the quest. Who you got, Verlox or the Paladins? Who do you think is going to win out in this one?
I'm pretty sure that a Paladin, the one true hero, will end up defeating Verlox.
I don't see it. I got to be honest, Verlox has spy orbs, Verlox has ogres, Verlox has a team of spies who seemingly can infiltrate Everrealm at any time they want. We have how many paladins? 6 paladins left?
Yes.
We've got Bonnie with a bum thumb. Look, I'll give you Shondo and Patrick. Andrew is a little hit and miss for my taste. Letitia is aight, and you know, these guys can't even put a scorpion together.
Yeah, that's that. Hopefully they don't have to rely on a scorpion to defeat Verlox.
Kurt, if 2 ogres show up at once, Everrealm is effed.
At the same time. Given that, it seems like there is no standing army, although it seems like the entire army is out on the front lines, but the battles are taking place at the castle. So maybe they just need to call back the armies and...
We're spread too thin.
They're spread too thin because you shouldn't just have one person, Ansgar, taking on the ogre. That's something you bring, like, you know, 8-10 people in on the battle. The trained soldiers, not the newbie paladins.
I mean, Verlox's forces hid 7... fire orbs all through Everrealm.
Mm-hmm.
Had he wanted to, at any point, he could have blown Everrealm off the face of the... Is Everrealm the place?
What? Everrealm's like the nation, and we're in the Kingdom of Sanctum.
Okay, the Sanctum could have blown clean off the face of Everrealm.
Yes.
I like Verlox.
But the fact that he hasn't won yet, that he's missing all of these opportunities, maybe puts things in our favor.
I think he's toying with them.
Okay.
I think he's toying with them. I think at any point he wants to, he could just wipe out all of the paladins, Ansgar, the queen, Creo, you know. I don't know, Kurt. I'm worried. I am worried.
Yeah, you think that a logical way to approach that fire orb challenge would have been, these things could blow up at any time. I'm going to let other people find them so that it detonates when they're carrying it, and I'm nowhere near it at the time.
Yeah, I'll take my chances with the fates.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I might have been thinking along those lines. All right, so what are we looking forward to next week?
I managed to actually avoid the previews next week.
Okay. Do you not watch the previews?
It varies.
Okay.
This time I, for some reason, chose not to watch them. So all I know is that I believe the title of one of the 2 episodes for next week mentions a dragon. So that's kind of cool to look forward to.
All right. Where are my dragons, Kurt?
They're going to be on ABC next Thursday.
Okay. So we will see what happens next week on the quest. Kurt, did we have any questions from the audience?
Any quests? Jim?
Yes.
I'm surprised we're just figuring that out now. There was, I saw one question on Twitter where somebody was asking about the Scorpions, asking, it was Jason DeLima asked, had the Paladins assembled the Scorpion on time, do you think they would have really fired at the ogre? Ogre in quotation marks. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think they would have, had they assembled it, I think they would have used their better judgment, seeing that it would not be wise to, they would just have as much a chance to hit Ansgar as the ogre, and they would have held back.
Yeah, I think that there was probably no chance they could have done that, you know. And then Sir Ansgar was like yelling for them to get that scorpion assembled. But had they gotten it assembled, I think you would have been like, oh, you know, hold your fire. I got this.
Yeah.
I got this. Like, Sean doesn't, no, man, I could hit it. I could get it. Like, no, Sean, we're good down here. All right. Let's take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode of Rob is a Podcast, talking about the quest, to our friends at Prosper.com. And Prosper, Kurt, is America's favorite peer-to-peer lender.
Oh, wow.
And because in up to just 72 hours, I could get $35,000 to cover any financial need. Maybe let's go back to the drawing board and let's try to figure out what I could be doing maybe to help out our friends in Everrealm and specifically in Sanctum. With trying to knock down Verlox a couple pegs.
Yeah. It seems like what they're missing is some sort of, basically like the Everrealm version of AAA. Like if your Scorpion breaks down and you need someone to come out and assemble it for you, you need this service, right?
I think so.
And so I think, yeah, so like, I don't know what you necessarily call this, but basically the Castle Sanctum AAA Scorpion Assembly. But yeah, they need a lot of help. They need someone that's a little bit of an expert to come out and help them for all these things.
So maybe this is like a quadruple A. And the fourth get A is for Ansgar.
Oh, yeah.
So Sir Ansgar, this is like your scorpion is just totally broken down. So here comes Sir Ansgar, quadruple A, and he's going to help get you back up on the road.
Yeah.
Thumb injury, whatever it is. Your cage is stuck. You can't get it through an obstacle course. Here comes Ansgar. You're going to summon him, and he's going to help you get back up and running in no time.
There you go. Ansgar on the go.
Is the economy in Everrealm okay? Can they support this business idea?
There seems to be all sorts of random meat products being sold in the courtyard of the castle.
So a stable economy.
Yes, lots of stables there.
Yes. A staple-based economy. All right, so with the help of the people at Prosper.com, you could pay off high-rate credit cards or high-fate credit cards. You could start a business or do that castle improvement project. Because with Prosper, it's never been easier. You just go online, answer a few questions, and you could see your low fixed rate in seconds, and your money will hit your account in as few as just 3 days, because Prosper is the fastest growing peer-to-peer lender, and they've facilitated over $1 billion in loans to help people and paladins like you, Kurt.
Great.
Yes. Their revolutionary platform connects people looking to borrow money with those who have the money to invest. There's no outrageous fees, no raising interest rates, and you'll never have to set foot in the bank. And that leaves you with more time to fight off Verlox.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're a little bit more trustworthy than Christian, our buddy Christian from this season.
Yes. They are the one true heroes. Just go to prosper.com/RHAP to check your rate instantly without affecting your credit score. And for a limited time, Prosper is offering Rob as a Podcast listeners a $50 Visa prepaid gift card when you get a loan. Go to prosper.com/RHAP. That's up to $35,000 in just 3 days and a $50 gift card. Go to prosper.com/RHAP. Other restrictions apply. See site for details. Gift card issued by Center State Bank of Florida, pursuant to license from Visa USA, Inc. All personal loans are made by WebBank, a Utah Chartered Industrial Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. How about that?
Pursuant. Nice.
Yes. All right. Kurt, any final thoughts on the quest for this week?
No, I think we're down to six. I'm enjoying all of the people in the final six. I guess I'm a little lukewarm on Lena. Like, I don't really feel like I know much about her, but I enjoy Patrick and Shondo and Bonnie and Letitia and Andrew. So looking forward to seeing where things take us this next week. We've got another couple back-to-back episodes on September 4th.
I'd have to say I'm a little ambivalent Patrick versus Andrew. I feel like I could give or take either of them. I feel like I don't need both of them.
I think the fact that Patrick threw everything in there and ended up with an injury, getting the Shiner, speaks well. I like that he threw himself in there that much. But at the same time, Andrew is very enthusiastic as well. We've seen that.
Yeah. I want to see Bonnie prove herself a little bit, too.
Yeah, she's already got a mark.
She's got a mark, but that was early on. I feel like, what have you done for me lately? I feel like of the paladins left, I feel like she's the weakest link.
Ah.
Sorry. Sorry, Bonnie.
She's got the most heart, though.
She has the most heart.
Which is very important for a paladin.
That is very important. And for a one true hero.
There you go.
Okay. All right, so we'll be back probably next Friday to talk about this. The problem is these two-hour episodes interfere with our live Big Brother coverage on Thursday night. Double eviction episode this Thursday, Kurt, for Big Brother.
Yes.
Well, it'll be a double eviction episode of The Quest as well because it'll be 2 hours.
Yes, fast forward The Quest.
It's The Quest fast forward. It's 2 hours of The Quest all in one huge night. And that'll get us down to, what, the final four?
Yeah, and then I'm guessing a two-hour finale on the 11th. We'll see how that goes.
Okay, so a lot to do. Stay tuned to The Quest. Make sure you subscribe to Rob as a podcast. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes for the main iTunes feed, and we'd love to hear what you guys have to say in the comments. Kurt, you have a hashtag for people.
I think that we would have to go with hashtag drunk Ansgar.
Just drunk Ansgar. Okay. Can we shorten that? Drunk Scar? Drunk,
sure.
Drunk Ansgar?
Drunk Scar. D-R-U-N-K-S-G-A-R.
Drunk Scar.
Drunk Scar.
All right, Kurt, thank you so much. Follow Kurt Clark on Twitter. He's at Kurt Clark. And Kurt, what are you working on for the Celebrity BBUK?
Actually, Mallory and I are meeting on Sunday to cover week 2. We had somebody go home on Wednesday and somebody go home on Friday. Give everybody an update on Busey Watch and how that's going. And it's been a firework of a season.
Okay, very very fun stuff. Check that out on robhasawebsite.com or on Reality TV Rehap Ups. You can get that feed at robhasawebsite.com/rhapups. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
Bye.